Okay, so welcome to the second seminar of the series. And it's a great pleasure to introduce today's speaker, Dan Sun from University of Chicago. Many of you are already very familiar with Sun's work, but for those who are not, who are young, Sun made many important contributions to condensed matter physics broadly defined. For example, Sun first understood how long-range interaction in metal change how they go into supercontinuing state in the context of quark-gluon plasma. And also Sun is able for a lot of people in condensed matter physics got excited in ADS-CFT correspondence by showing how that correspondence can be used to compute quantities that are familiar in condensed matter physics, like transport coefficients. And more recently, Sun solved the long-standing puzzle of the particle symmetry in the half-field Landau level. So for his contribution, Sun received the Dirac Prize in 2018. So it's great to have Sun in the seminar. So today we will hear about electrodynamics of thin sheets of twisted materials. So, and if you have a question, so we encourage everyone to mute, but if you have a question, you may raise your hand. And if you have short clarification question, you may ask in the middle, but if you have a long question or discussion, we encourage you to hold off to the end of the talk so that people who have to leave at 1:30 can leave after finishing hearing the talk. Okay, thank you. Sun?
Oh, thank you very much, Sungsik. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much. I would like to thank the organizer for giving me the opportunity to give this talk at the at this series of seminars. I greatly enjoyed the first one, and I hope my talk will match your expected standard. I'm going to tell you about a simple work that I have recently done with Zung Nguyen, who is now a postdoc at Brown. We put out our paper during the summer, and it has to do with a problem of scattering, or in general, electrodynamics of thin sheets of twisted material. So let me give briefly our motivation for this work. Our motivation comes from the physics of twisted bilayer graphene. If we take two sheets of graphene, each one atomic layer thin, and put them on top of each other, but before putting them on each other, we rotate one sheet with respect to the other by a small angle, then the resulting two-layer sheet of material will have a very interesting moiré pattern, which has a large periodicity of pseudo-periodicity in space. People have studied, have speculated that this type of situation may give rise to interesting, strongly correlated phases of electrons. And recently, this has been found. One see different type of metallic, mod insulator, superconducting state. The nature of these phases are still being studied. The interesting angle where strongly correlated physics happen is when this angle theta, the relative angle of orientation of the two sheets, is about 1.1 degrees. Other twisted materials have been studied recently, including twisted double bilayer graphene. When we take two sheets of bilayer graphene, put them on top of each other, again rotating them in the beginning by small angles. Also twisted trilayer graphene, where you have three layers of graphene put on top of each other. We would like to ask the question, what one can learn by scattering light on a thin sheet of twisted material. Here, we are going to study the regime under which the wavelength of light that we send to the sheet is much larger than the thickness of the sheet itself. In experiment, this is usually true. The thickness of the sheet of material which is being studied is about a few is measured in angstrom, where the wavelength of visible light is 1,000 angstrom. This study has been done for single layer graphene, and what is interesting is that the absorption of light by single layer graphene in some sense measure the fine structure constant. If we send light to I think single sheet of graphene, then about 2.3% of the light would be absorbed, and that 2.3% is approximately pi times alpha. So in some sense, single layer graphene is almost transparent because the fine structure constant is much less than one. How one can understand that number, or how one can compute this number 2.3%? So it's rather easy. One start from the Maxwell equation that describes the incoming wave, the wave that we send to graphene. In this equation, I assume that the light falls perpendicularly to the sheet of graphene. So I suppress in the Maxwell equation derivative with respect to the x and the y axis, that are the axis parallel to the graphene sheet, and keep only derivative the variation of A with respect to the direction perpendicular to the sheet and dependence on time, which is this omega here. Derivative with respect to time give rise to this omega square. And I've chosen a certain gauge in which A in this particular problem has only AX and AY components. Parallel to the sheet. And on the right-hand side of these Maxwell equations, this wave equation is the current J. This current is zero outside the graphene sheet and is non-zero only on the sheet of graphene. And so one can say that this J is a delta function of Z. The graphene sheet is located at Z equal to zero. So this J is some two-dimensional current, small j, 2D time delta of Z. Now this current J is created by the electric field of the incoming electromagnetic waves. So using Ohm's law, we can write this as J equals sigma E. So the total expression would be sigma E time delta of Z. So now, one thing that one needs to be careful is that this sigma is in general frequency dependent. So here, the sigma has to be calculated at the frequency of the incoming waves. But other than that, this equation is simply an equation that one solved a lot of time during quantum mechanics course when one compute the scattering amplitude of a plane wave on a delta function of potential in one dimension. This is a standard problem in undergraduate quantum mechanics. With a delta function of potential, we find the boundary condition for the wave function. In this case, the role of the wave function is played by A. So A is continuous on the at the point z equal to zero, where the delta functional potential leaves, and its derivative is discontinuous. There is no not much mystery here. Doing the calculation, one find that the absorption of light is equal to 2 pi divided by C times sigma in Gauss unit. So in the quantum mechanical problem, there is no absorption here because there is a dissipation due to the electrical conductivity of the sheet. There is an absorption, and this absorption turned out to be just proportional to the conductivity sigma divided by C. Now one can see why this when we see here the fine structure constant sigma, the conductivity is roughly E squared over H in order of by order of magnitude. So here sigma divided by C is E squared divided by H bar C, which is nothing but the fine structure constant. For graphene, the so-called optical conductivity can be calculated just from the one loop diagram with the fermion, Dirac fermion running inside the loop. And taking into account the fact that there are four-fold degeneracy of the Dirac fermions, two from spin, two from valleys, one finds that the sigma is equal pi squared divided by 2h, and putting that into this absorption that we have computed, we find pi alpha, the result that surprisingly have been measured experimentally. So the calculations of... Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had a brief question about this conductivity. So this is not the DC...
This is AC conductivity.
AC conductivity in the low frequency limit?
In the at the limit of light that is sent to the graphene. I think this calculation is done here, assume that the frequency is frequency must be smaller than the Dirac frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the graphene should be in the linear dispersion, regime of linear dispersion.
Right, but it has some frequency corrections, and this is some limit at small frequency. Is that
how it's a limit at a small frequency? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, frequency much less than the bandwidth of graphene.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people are interested in the another sort of correction, which is a correction due to the interaction between the fermions, and that interaction somehow doesn't for some reason have a very small numerical coefficient in front, and although it can by counting just order of magnitude, it can give a large correction to this formula, but somehow the correction is small. So is there more possibilities that we can explore with photons? For twisted system, one can very easily imagine that there are, one can see effects related to the chirality of the material. For example, Faraday rotation. When we send light to a system that breaks reflection symmetry in the XY axis, when this light, the polarization of light can rotate just because there is asymmetry between the front and the back layers of twisted bilayer graphene. So when we send light there, when symmetry doesn't forbid that this plane of rotation changes. That effect is called Faraday rotation. There is another measure of optical activity called chiral dichroism. And to write formulas for that characterizes the Faraday rotation and chiral dichroism, one can pose a problem in the same way as one would pose a problem of scattering in quantum mechanics. Namely, we write down waves, the solution to the Maxwell equation in the in z less than zero that consists of incoming wave and a reflected wave. And when z is larger than zero, the solution is just this transmitted wave. And there are two indices. The index plus minus here refer to two different circular polarizations, left-handed and right-handed polarization of light. So these R and T, the reflection and the transmission coefficients, can be dependent on the polarization. And the Faraday rotation angle, theta of F, is the difference between the phases of the transmitted waves with left and right-handed polarizations. And the coefficient that characterizes chiral dichroism usually is defined as the difference in the absorption of the transmitted and the transmission of left-handed and right-handed mode. So this CD coefficient, the coefficient of chiral dichroism, is proportional to the difference between the absolute values of T plus and T minus, while the Faraday rotation coefficient measures the difference between the phases of the complex amplitude T plus and T minus. There have been many previous works considering, well, computing the this coefficient, the chiral dichroism coefficient, Faraday rotations, for twisted bilayer graphene. So we would like to add to this story a simple but rather general treatment based on 2D theory, completely two-dimensional treatment of the chiral response of the thin sheet of material on external waves. And then we concentrate our attention on the low energy regimes, on the types of phases that may be realized in the recent twisted material.
Question?
Yeah.
Yeah, are you aware that this has been studied in biological materials with phospholipid membranes?
I'm sorry? Yeah.
Are you aware that this effect, I think it is the same, has been studied with biological materials with light scattering of a phospholipid cell membrane?
I'm aware that has been studied, but I'm not sure about I'm aware only the answer. Well, I can answer the question that yes, I'm aware, but to a very small extent.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. But I think this is something that our theory might be applicable, as you will see, if we are probing a system with a thickness that is much smaller than the wavelength of light.
Right.
Otherwise, it doesn't matter whether what we probe is a quantum layer or a classical system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so what determines the optical activity of a thin sheet of material? The surface conductivity sigma, just measuring how, what is the current that is induced by the electric field on the membrane, does not break spatial reflection. There is a situation where we can have whole conductivity, but that requires breaking of time reversal symmetry, and we are not going to consider such a situation. So the surface conductivity itself cannot tell us anything about the Faraday rotation or chiral dichroism. One way to think about the problem is to go to the fully three-dimensional treatment, in which one does not neglect the thickness of this membranes, But that can be done only at the cost of making the theory more complicated. We will show that there is a slight extension of the two-dimensional calculation that we have just done for graphene, just single layer graphene, that can tell us about the magnitude of the chiral effect, and relate the magnitude of the chiral effect to some other physical quantity which we can imagine quite intuitively. So before proceeding, let us fix what we want the system, which kind of symmetries we want the system to have. We will assume that there is no symmetry under two-dimensional reflection, in which x goes to x and y goes to minus y. That would enable non-zero chiral activity, chiral response. We will assume that there is no symmetry under the exchange of two layers in bilayer graphene, or in general, there is no symmetry under reflection across the middle of the thin layer when we take z goes to minus z. But we will assume that there is a symmetry under a combination of these two symmetries, namely when x goes to x, y goes to minus y, and z goes to minus z. Basically, it's a rotation by an angle pi around the x-axis, and this is a symmetry of twisted bilayer graphene. And it is also a symmetry of twisted bilayer on bilayer graphene or trilayer graphene if under certain circumstances. And we assume that there is time reversal. There is no external magnetic field. Now, let me tell you what is the minimal ingredients of the theory that we need. We defined two moments of the current. The first current, J, this is a surface current, which is obtained by integrating the volume current, capital J, in the whole space across in the z-axis. We assume that most of the physics happen around x is equal to zero, where the membrane is located. So this J is just the two-dimensional current. But we will keep one extra piece of information, that is this current zeta here, defined as the integral of J weighted with the coordinate Z. So it's the first moment of the three-dimensional current with respect to the height Z. One can think about this zeta as the electric dipole current. Imagine that we have two sheets of material and there are current moving independently on these two layers. Then the current J is just the sum of the current on the first sheet and on the second sheet. And the current zeta is the proportional to the difference between the current between the two sheets. So if we imagine that there is a current of dipole, each of these dipole is the pair of positive and negatively charged particle, one located on an upper layer, one on the lower layer, and this dipole moves, then it would create this current zeta. So the way that this current zeta is defined, it is not, this current J is a conserved current. But zeta is not conserved if there is a tunneling between particles from one layer to another. On the other hand, it's a well-defined mathematical current. Now, let us recall that the entropy production or the ohmic heat is proportional to the integral of J dot E. So in this equation, I think I'm missing a factor of T if we treat the entropy production. But this ohmic heat, if we have a very thin system, we can expand. And if the electric field changes slowly in the Z direction, The wavelength of light is much larger than the thickness of the material. We can expand E as a function of Z in Taylor series. And keeping only the first two terms, we get J times E measure at zero and zeta times derivative of E with respect to Z at zero. So one can think about the current zeta as something conjugate to the gradient of the electric field in the Z direction. In the same way as the electric field creates a current, the gradient of the electric field creates that dipole current. And then one can generalize the Ohm's law. Now, instead of one single conductivity sigma, we have to introduce four conductivities, sigma, sigma one, sigma one tilde, and sigma two. So sigma tell us that an electric field creates a current. But sigma one tell us that the gradient of electric field in the Z direction also creates current. Sigma one tilde tell us that the electric field creates a dipole current. And sigma two is the diagonal response of a dz of E, dz of E creates a dipole current. If time reversal is a symmetry of the system, one can show that the Onsaker relation requires that sigma one and sigma one tilde is equal to each other. The spatial symmetry that we have required in the previous transparency, where we say that the system has to be symmetric under a combination of z goes to minus z and reflection in the xy plane, requires the response, this off-diagonal response, to be also off-diagonal in the spatial indices, so like a whole response. That's the reason why I wrote the vector product with z axis in this formula. A gradient of E in the x direction create a current in the y direction, for example.
So, sorry, Son?
Yeah.
Ask something. So zeta, you call it the dipole moment current. This is just magnetization, no? Magnetic moment, no? What you're writing
slightly is different, like, yeah.
It looks like magnetoelectric relationships, right?
This dz, yeah, you see here, this dz of E is derivative of the magnetic field with respect to
electric
time.
Field, that's magnetic field, right? Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a B dot. And so it's a response of the system on the change of the magnetic field rather than, if you have a magnetic field, a constant magnetic field would not lead to any dissipative effect.
Right, but at finite frequency, you know, response to magnetic field or derivative of magnetic field is the same, right? It's up to
yeah.
The phenomenon.
It's Faraday's law. It's a Faraday's law, essentially.
Yeah, exactly, right. Yeah.
Faraday's law, yeah, dz of E is equal to B dot.
Right, yeah.
So now B dot creates a, if you have B in the X axis, changing with as a function of time, it creates a current also moving in the x-axis. So that's what what's not forbidden by symmetry, by time reversal and the spatial symmetry. B field itself doesn't create any current, but the change of B in time would create a current.
So there's no induced Trin-Simon theory, Trin-Simon term?
No, yeah, we
That's
require
right.
time reversal symmetry, yeah.
Well, yeah in sorry, principle, sorry, sorry, to interrupt, sorry, to interrupt, but this does look like a magnetoelectric effect, right? So J is driven by E and B, and then magnetization is driven by B, which is the second term, and E, which is, you know, magnetoelectric effect, essentially. So, all right, thank you.
Yeah,
I got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here it is convenient, I think, it's convenient to write it this way. You can think about that as a way as well. So we are going to call that sigma 1 or sigma 1 tilde the twisted conductivity. It's a conductivity created by a gradient of electric field along the z direction. And the current it creates move in the direction that is perpendicular to that electric field. By dimensional analysis.
Quick questions. But I would think that the derivative of field depends on the wavelength of the light. So it's a very small compared. I mean, d over lambda of the wavelength should be small.
Yeah, so this effect is going to be suppressed by d over lambda compared to sigma. But the Faraday rotation is just dependent on that coefficient. It's just first order in this coefficient. So if we want to ask the question about chiral effects like Faraday rotation, we cannot ignore this sigma one.
But it means that it will be small, isn't it?
It's going to be small. We are going to estimate the magnitude of that for it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
For graphene. It's you can see that sigma leads to effect of order alpha. So we should expect that sigma one would lead to effects that is suppressed by another a small small coefficient. Okay, so now we are going to try to find what kind of quantum mechanical analogous, what is kind of analogous quantum mechanical problems that we see here. So we have this equation, the wave equation, where J here is three-dimensional current. We want to reduce this equation into a set of boundary condition on A on the thin sheet. So as usual in quantum mechanics, we integrate between over dz between minus epsilon and epsilon, where epsilon is larger than the thickness of this sheet of material. We find there is a jump of the derivative of A across the z equal to zero thin sheet, and the amount of jump is equal to the current. But here we can do another integral. We integrate this dz with a weight z. And by doing integration by part, we find that the jump of A itself is proportional to the dipole current. So here both A and A prime jumps, not just A prime. And now using this generalized Ohm's law, I can write this as a linear combination of A and A prime themselves, because electric field and derivative of electric field is just A and A prime up to a factor of omega. So here we should have a set of boundary condition for our problems. We solve the wave equations in free space, but with some boundary condition at z equal to zero. But here is the problem. These equations, these boundary conditions are not unambiguous. It is because both A and A prime jumps. We don't know what is the right-hand side that determines these jumps. We hear the jump of A prime is a linear combination of A and A prime, but both of these are discontinuous function. So strictly speaking, this is mathematical nonsense. So the same problem would happen if you try to ask your students to solve the scattering problem in quantum mechanics with the delta prime of x potential, or a delta linear combination of delta x and delta prime of x potential. They would be very confused. So this problem has been, one solution to this problem has been suggested by no one other than David Griffiths. He suggested that one can make the problem well-defined by defining the jump. When we say here we have A, it's actually average, arithmetic average of the value of A at epsilon at minus epsilon, and the same for A prime. And we do that for both equation, both boundary condition. So that leads to a well-defined and prescription, which is consistent with unitarity in the quantum mechanical problem. if we use this prescription and we assume sigma 1 is more because k is more, we find that the transmission and reflection amplitude can be written in terms of sigma and sigma 1. By the way, I neglect sigma 2, which is even smaller, expected to be smaller. And the Faraday rotation and chiral dichroism is just related to the imaginary part of this twisted conductivity sigma 1 and the real part of sigma 1. A more honest approach would be to try to solve the problem in three dimensions, parameterizing the response of a slab with a finite thickness by a conductivity which can be non-local in the height coordinate z. Try to solve this Maxwell equation with this response function sigma ab, and then take the limit when the wavelength of the light goes to zero or is much larger than the thickness of this slab. It's turned out to be a exercise with Green's function, which has involved rather straightforward but rather long calculation, which I'm not going to present here. But eventually, we find formulas for the quantities that are natural in this calculation turn out to be 1 over t, 1 over the transmission amplitude, and the ratio of r over t, the reflection and transmission amplitude. And the result turn out to be the same as we have found using this very simplified prescription, except for an extra coefficient, extra correction proportional to k in sigma. So if we do the calculation and keep k to the zeroth order and k to the first order, contribution, we find essentially the same formula for the Faraday rotation and the chiral dichroism coefficient. Okay, so now we want to understand what chiral activity reveals about low energy mode of our materials. Usually the low energy mode are the most interesting, contains the most interesting physics. So we are going to limit ourselves to low energy photons. And depending on the type of phase that we are discussing, I'm going to talk about a photon with energy less than the gap for an insulator, less than the Fermi energy for metals, and less for BCS gap for superconductors. So one question that one can ask is how does, for example, the Faraday rotation angle depends on the frequency of the light that we send to the system? And it turned out to be a question that one can address without much calculations for some of these phases. So let's consider the insulating phase. An insulator has no degrees of freedom. Just if it, a trivial insulator would has an effective action written completely in terms of the external electromagnetic fields. So in our problem, we can think about action which consists of the sum of the bulk action, the action of the electromagnetic field in space, in 3+1 dimensional space, and a brain action, an action leaving on the surface. And if one thinks what kind of terms one can write using just the electromagnetic field, a mu, and it's consistent with the symmetries that we have imposed, time reversal and the rotation with the angle to a pi around x-axis. And also here, I assume sufficient symmetry with respect to rotation around the x and y axis. For example, C3 in along the rotation by an angle 2 pi over 3 around the z axis. The only term in the action that can break the reflection symmetry is this one, epsilon AB ADZEB. So this action lives on the brain. So here I put a delta of Z here. This action is in some sense not truly a brain action because it depends on the derivative of the electric field along the Z direction. It's not really an action that depends only on the field living on this 2 plus 1 dimensional brain. But we can use this action to compute, for example, the current. So the current would be derivative of this action with respect to A, and we find this contribution proportional to delta of Z. There is contribution that also proportional to derivative of the delta function. That is the this dipole current that I've talked about. So due to the fact that here there is a time derivative in the current, the this twisted conductivity is can be calculated to be proportional to beta, this coefficient beta times omega. And using the formula that we have derived previously, imaginary part of omega 1 is omega, and so this Faraday rotation is proportional to omega square. For insulators, then we find that the angle of Faraday rotation is quadratic in the frequency, in the low frequency limit. But this dependence can be obtained even in a simpler way by a simple power counting. So let's look at this brain action again. We know that the electric field is the derivative of the A mu, and so it has dimension 2. So here's 2 factor E give us dimension 4 already. Derivative of Z and delta function over Z give us 2 more, 1 addition of 1. And so the Lagrangian density here has dimension 6, and beta should have dimension minus 2. The Faraday rotation should be proportional to beta, and it, as an angle, is a dimensionless quantity. And so the Faraday rotation angle should be beta times omega square. Just from power counting, one can obtain this. Now one can imagine, one can interpret this coefficient beta in another way. Let's imagine that we turn on an electric field parallel to the thin sheet of material. Then we can compute from this action the current density and integrate that current density over the whole space and compute the quadrupole moment. And one finds that the electric field in the x direction lead to a quadrupole moment component yz.
What determines the sine of beta?
The sine of beta is the rotation. If you think about the twisted bilayer graphene, the upper and the layer layers have certain twists with respect to the other. The angle of the twist determines the sine of beta.
It's a predictable thing, or it's
something? It's a predictable thing. Yeah, we haven't calculated that for any system.
I mean, it depends on the band structure, for example.
On the band structure.
I appreciate that the angle determines everything, but it's not absolutely clear that it's just angle, rather than the effect of angle on the, basically on the band structure, even without interactions, if you have free particles.
Yeah, I suspect it is it is more complicated than just saying that the angle times something that we can calculate it when the angle is zero. So I think it's just we need to know the whole band structure of the material.
Yeah, I'm afraid that it is pretty sensitive.
But yeah, but you see there is one phase where this calculation is simpler than the than we don't need to know about the whole band structure.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's do the whole the same calculation in for a superconductor, superconducting phase. In the superconducting phase, there is a phase of the condensate living on the brains. So the action of that phase is just the action of a scalar, basically a massless, like a massless phase, well, a phase coupled to external electromagnetic field. But in the case when there is no reflection symmetry in the XY direction, there is another term which can be called the Lifshitz invariant. In the superconducting literature, it's called the Lifshitz invariant. In our case, it looks like a term proportional to the product of the magnetic field, of the tangential magnetic field, and the superfluid velocity. So it's the term in the Ginzburg-Landau functional that tell us that there is an energy difference between there's an energy there is a energy of interaction between the magnetic field and the superfluid current. So this if we analyze the dimension of this operator, A has dimension 1, B has dimension 2, delta function has dimension 1, we find that alpha is dimensionless. And so in the superconductors, if we manage to measure the Faraday rotation for very low energy photons, photons with energy less than the BCS gap, then this Faraday rotation angle will be independent of the frequency, just alpha times omega to the zero power. Okay, so now let's try to understand the metallic phase. In metal, quasi-particles form a Fermi liquid, the same. We have, even if the system is twisted, several layers. If we have metal, then we should expect to be able to describe the low energy dynamics of such a system as the collection of quasi-particles. Let's consider a scattering of low energy photons with a frequency much less than the Fermi energy. How can the system generate chiral effect? And it's it can generate chiral effect because now quasi-particles, this Landau quasi-particle can carry orbital magnetic moments. So imagine that this, this particle propagates along this membranes, but it's the position of the center of mass of this wave packet can oscillate between the layers, and it can, in principle, make a spiral-like trajectory. So when it make a spiral, when it move along the brains, then it will have a magnetic moment, not a spin, not spin up magnetic moment, but orbital magnetic moment. So now, in order to describe such a system, we have to parameterize the system by introducing magnetic moments as a function of the momentum P, and include the interaction of the magnetic field with this magnetic moment in the kinetic equation. And the Boltzmann equation, the system will respond to this external magnetic field. For example, in the relaxation time approximation, the system will try to relax to a state, a thermal equilibrium state, Fermi Dirac distribution determined by this new dispersion relation. And you see here the effect of the time-dependent magnetic field. If the magnetic field changes with time, then the system will try to catch up with a Fermi Dirac distribution that is also changing with time, and that generates entropy. And so this kinetic equation will tell us how the system responds to an external electric field, just usual Drude Sommerfeld calculation, but also a new new term in a new effect arises from the magnetic orbital magnetic moment, and it will give formulas. We can derive the formulas for the conductivity. Basically, this is just a Drude formula, and the twisted conductivity. So the conductivity is proportional as usual to the relaxation time, the density of state on the Landau on the Fermi level, and the average square of the velocity of the quasi-particle around the Fermi surface. And it turns out that this sigma 1, the twisted conductivity, is the formula is almost exactly the same as the conductivity. But instead of this average of the velocity square, we have the scalar product of the velocity and the magnetic moment, which I like to call the magnetic helicity of this quasi-particle. So this sigma 1 is proportional to the average magnetic helicity of the quasi-particles around the Fermi surface. So the coefficient, the chiral dichroism coefficient, is just related by just proportional to the ratio of the magnetic helicity of the quasi-particle and the square of the velocity. And the same with the Faraday rotation. The Faraday rotation coefficient, in order to find the Faraday rotation, the simplest regime to work with is when omega tau is much larger than one, when the frequency of the light is larger than the one over the lifetime, one of the relaxation time in the Boltzmann equation. In this case, in this regime, intermediate regimes of omega, still much less than epsilon f, but much larger than one over tau, the Faraday rotation angle is constant and measures basically the magnetic helicity of this quasi-particle.
Apologies. Again, probably it's a wrong question, but you start, I think, with time reversal system, right?
Time reversal, yeah, invariant.
Invariant system.
Yeah, there is time reversal invariant system.
Right. So for example, single layer graphene on a substrate also has gaps, and there is magnetic moment, orbital magnetic moment for two different Wallis k prime, mm-hmm. but they are opposite direction, and I would suspect that the result would be zero for this quantity.
Yeah, the result would be zero for single layer graphene.
Yes. Yes. So what changed?
For double layer graphene, when you twist the upper and the lower layer by an angle, the sign of this angle determines whether the magnetic moment slightly is preferred to point in the direction of the velocity or in the opposite direction of the velocity. So
suppose there is no tunneling between the layers.
If no tunneling, then it's going to be zero.
This is an in-plane magnetic moment, Leonid.
So you think that it's, if you have small tunneling, then this will be an effect proportional to the tunneling.
One needs tunneling to have this mm-hmm. effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, I will show you the formula that where this is explicit. So let's.
Can I stop you? Sorry. Yeah. So actually, this formula for sigma one kind of suggest that interpreting zeta as magnetization is right, because what's written is essentially current induced magnetization, right? So there is a correlator between V and mu. So V is current, basically you induce magnetization with current. So this sigma one is really a magnetoelectric coefficient. So and another question, if you thought about this two-dimensional system as the limit of a three-dimensional system made thinner and thinner, mm-hmm. there would be another contribution to current. That is the magnetization current, curl of magnetization current. So how come you do not include it here?
So this magnetization does not have the correct, I believe I have to think about that again, but I believe it doesn't have the correct symmetry to induce this effect. So this sigma 2 that I'm writing here, in fact, this omega, this is actually the magnetization, proportional to magnetization. Magnetization is suppressed by 1 over C because it's suppressed by the speed of light as well.
Yeah, I think it's V over C effect, the Fermi velocity over speed of light.
All of this is actually V over C effect. So
no, it's an extra V over C, I think, compared to sigma compared to what sigma 1 is, I think.
But
no,
I think okay. Dima, maybe I will I have to think a little bit more to answer this question. I believe this is smaller. The effect is much smaller than the effect of sigma 1 4 in the regime of a thin a layer that is much thinner than the wavelength. Okay. So for I have a few minutes left. Let me just sketch the calculation one can do for twisted bilayer graphene. Let me skip this slide. Basically, in the when the angle of twisting is small, much smaller than one, one can use a continuum model in which we average over distances much over a distance that is still larger than the spacing of the original graphene. And so the whole continuum model that was used by Bistritzer and McDonald to find out the angle at which there is a flat band would give us a rather simple Bohring model for theta that is large compared to 1 degree, but very well defined model in which one can see the different bands. The lowest band would be like deformed, just a Dirac cone, two original Dirac cones due to the diagonal term in this Hamiltonian, and T here is basically the tunneling between the two layers. For theta that is larger than one, one can do perturbation theory over the tunneling. So here, let's imagine that we put in some chemical potential that's of order of the bandwidth of the lowest band at angle that is larger than 1 degree. Then simple calculation tell us that, well, a straightforward calculation will relate this Faraday rotation angle with the various numbers, the alpha here, and the tunneling amplitude. There is a ratio of V0 over C here. For angle of order 2 degree, this rotation can be of order 10 to minus 5, and chiral dichroism can reach in optimal value of mu order 10 to minus 4. So there has been few experiments on chiral effect on twisted bilayer graphenes. None of these experiments concentrate the attention on low energy regimes of the photons. So here is one experiment done in a few years ago when they measure the chiral dichroism for photon with energy of order EV, rather high energy photons. You see here that the chiral dichroism changes sign when we have a graphene with different rotation, basically by flipping this twisted by the sheet, one just changed the sign of the chiral effect as one expect. So the number here, 10 to minus 5 for Faraday rotation and 10 to minus 4 in chiral dichroism, are small, but not outside the range of capability of experiment. So let me go to the conclusion. Scattering a photon can reveal properties of low energy excitations. The magnitude of the effects are small, but within the sensitivity of experiment. It would be interesting if this provide us with new experimental probes that we can use to characterize interesting phases, for example, strongly correlated phases of twisted bilayer graphene. The calculation that we have presented for the Fermi for the metallic phase here is basically a calculation in simple Landau Fermi liquid theory. The calculation that we have done for the insulating phase and the superconducting phase, on the other hand, are based only on the validity of the low energy effective theory. And in principle, can be the formulas that we have derived there is applicable also for the strongly correlated phases, for strongly correlated MOT insulator and strongly correlated superconducting phase. And so it would be interesting if the dependence on the coefficients in front of the dependence of these chiral effects on frequency, this for insulating phase coefficient in front of omega squared would tell us something about the nature of these phases. Thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, thank you very much for the very clear talk, Sun. So it's 1:30. So for those who have to leave for class or something, you may leave. But for those who have questions, can continue our discussion. And if you raise your hands, then I will call each person. So Oscar, you can go ahead with your question.
Hi. Regarding the formula that you have at the end, which is proportional to WAA and WAB, is this,
yes.
you stated that this is for angles above 1 degree. Is this because it's perturbative in the ratio of the tunneling to the VFK theta?
Yeah, it is because it's perturbative in this. This ratio is supposed to be smaller than one.
Okay, thanks.
For the calculation that we've done to be valid.
Thank you.
Yeah. But when we make this estimate 10 to minus 5, I think we put angle two degrees, which we assume that this order, the order of magnitude would still be valid for this kind of angle.
Right, but for the magic angle, it would not work, right? Because there it's-
For the magic angle, I don't know how to, it would be of order one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other question? Dima, go ahead.
Could I ask you about this magnetic moment, the nature of the magnetic moment, in plane component of it in particular?
Mm-hmm.
So there is this well-known formula for the orbital moment of a quasi-particle, which is very similar to the formula for the Berry curvature, right, up to this H minus E factor in it. But mm-hmm. it tells you that for a planar system, for a bent structure that depends only on Kx and Ky, the magnetic moment can be only in Z direction. It's only out of plane. So how do you go about that for this twisted? I can tell, you know, they need to spin like you said they would spin, but how do you get this magnetic moment? What formula do you use it, for it?
I think this is not a Berry phase, Berry curvature effect. So I have to recall, maybe I stop sharing.
It's fine. It's fine. If you
yeah, I can tell you. Yeah, it's fine. Escaped me how to explain this. Just, in
I am trying to figure this out because I should know, but I can't, right?
No, I should know. Yeah, I should know how to explain this. But right now I'm a bit. That's embarrassing. But I should. Can you wait one second? Maybe I when I share my paper.
Of course.
I would know a bit. Maybe I share this at you. I have to couple the system to two different. So you see here, let's imagine twisted bilayer graphene. So here I'm couple a system to a magnetic field, which in this case is just the situation in which the upper layer and the lower layer has slightly different A, which is the vector potential. So the response of such a system is the difference between the upper current and the lower current, right? So basically, we have to do perturbation theory respect. Maybe it's a little bit it's too technical to explain. But the idea here is to find out the response of the system on when we turn on a slightly different vector potential in the upper and the lower layer. So this calculation doesn't look like that it can be reduced to Berry phase. Some reason.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, any further questions? So I have one question. So your 2D formalism seems to be very generous. So presumably this can be applied to boundary between any two media. So do you expect, say, sigma non-zero sigma 1 between, say, any two media that breaks the inversion in the XY plane, I guess?
Yeah, I think this calculation, we have done this calculation with one additional complication that the medium has different different coefficient, different epsilon dielectric constant z larger than zero and z less than zero. The formula at the end for the Faraday rotation is exactly the same as written here. I think we need to break the reversal x go to, so we have to break the somehow break the two-dimensional spatial reflection in order to find a non-zero chiral effect. If we have just two boundary between two media, then with nothing on the boundary, then I don't know how to get this effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You need to break the inversion within the plane.
Mm. Yeah, unless the media themselves break that symmetry, but then that would be a bark effect, not a boundary effect.
Somehow, right.
Somehow you're asking if there is two. Yeah. There could be, if there is, if there's just two bulk material put on top of each other with a twist, maybe there's there might be this effect. It's it's an interesting question.
Okay.
Just maybe one comment, if it's all right.
Sure.
I kind of messed with these moments, magnetic moments, a bit. So it actually turns out that in metallic systems that the disorder makes contribution to these magnetic moments. Just like in anomalous Hall effect, you have, you know, intrinsic and extrinsic contributions to sigma XY. There are intrinsic and extrinsic contribution to these magnetic moments. And if the system is clean, it's of course this pesky skew scattering that dominates everything. So, you know, to expect that you will get something intrinsic, some intrinsic information about the system from this stuff is can be questionable, actually.
Right. Yeah, so that's a thing that so here we concentrate on this omega tau much larger than one regime.
Ah, right, then you're right, yes.
Yeah.
The disorder so this, of course will die off, right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I don't see any more hands raised. So, okay, thank you, Song, again for the nice talk, and thank you everyone for joining. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Song.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.